it's definitely worth some extra points. And Ariana, yep. nice sweater.
Oh, look, they're twins.
Yeah. We coordinated.
Welcome to This Week in Pubathon, episode 15. Oh, look, they're twins.
Aiden Aiden had three goals. Get cold comparison through. Make one of those figures tracking expression over time for individual. Determine next steps. Where do you fall down, Aiden?
Well, I don't know how much progress I made on determining next steps, but for the other two, I mean, kind of killed it this week, honestly.
All right. It's good to hear.
Didn't just get the cold comparison through WGCNA. Also got comparisons for both ambient and cold for the Baird Eye exclusive transcriptome and the hematidinium exclusive transcriptome. And I was able to make figures for every single module in every single one of those comparisons. So I'm going to give myself an 11 out of 10.
All right. Good week. That's what I was hoping for. 11 out of 10. Do you want to show us some of these figures or do you want to watch?
Sure.
Yeah, let's show. I can't wait. Let's I want to see these expression figures as if they're what I imagine they might be.
Sure thing. All right. So this is for Baird Eye transcriptome 4.0, which is only Baird Eye genes. And let's look at, say, ambient crabs. So here's kind of the dendrogram that shows the original and merged colors. Or wait, sorry, that's just the original. Mm-hmm. This one's the original and merged Daikin genes. And so this is like what, like, you know, black is corresponds to like black here. And I'll show the heat map really quick. So of these, the one that most relates to day, top number is R squared, bottom number is p-value. So it looks like the one that most relates is the tan module, value of 0.1. So not significant, but here is the TPM graph. And I noticed that for basically all of them, it isn't really directly informative because the scale is thrown off by a couple of them. And so I also graphed the log TPM, and that looks a little like this.
Okay. So generally,
I mean, a lot of them are just like really busy. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is, I guess I wasn't expecting this like particular one because, well, I can't wrap my head around log. But do you have this non-logged or?
Yeah. So all of them, I have the log and the non-log. So
maybe somebody else can, but I mean, you can pull that one back up or something or you can leave it there. It's fine. Okay. So generally speaking, you know, these are low leaks. It's expressed kind of evenly over time. But do you have 4 days?
3 days. So there's time points at day zero, day two, and day 17.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. This is the time. I got you. But this is the scale. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The crisscross ones is what are shocking me.
I don't fully understand that either.
Yeah. Because my whole idea would be is that it would module them based on expression pattern over time. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're just moduling them based on expression pattern. But to see if it's really correlated over time, you have to look at that table first.
And the other thing, this is pretty important, is that this is all genes in individual crab, rather than say like all genes average, like each gene averaged together. So if like expression for two crabs goes up and like from day zero to day two and expression for one crab goes down from day zero to day two, all three of those lines are going to show up on the graph, which might result in some weird lines.
Right. But you're saying in the analysis, it's just, you would use the same data for the analysis that gave you the modules, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, if the module, like, the module is looking at the gene specifically without really accounting for crab when it's grouping them.
So you think it's taking the average?
I mean, I kind of assumed so.
Yeah.
But that might not be true.
Can you close that figure? Just
yeah, sure.
look at all of the...
Which one are you looking at?
No, I just wanted to... Okay, this is fine. I'm just trying to look for patterns and make... Makes sense. The big X's is what confuses me the most. I don't know.
Here? I mean, yeah, that's true in like green, yellow, and black. So,
yeah.
and purple to some degree.
Are they, Aiden, are so all three crab are in each of those X, big X figures?
Yeah, so like each one of, like, let's see, if I go to, say, shoot, like the Hermatidinium ones where there's a lot less lines, so it's easier to kind of see what's going on. Like, so the gray module is the one that I think has the smallest. Like, for each of, like, basically each crab is a different line. Rather than like all crab, like each gene being a different line. So there's three lines per gene.
So the WGCNA analysis probably just based on, we looked at a similar expression pattern, but didn't really say over time. It could just be, I don't know what else there is, just relative. It could just be as a whole relative to each other genes or something, some other kind of indices that it used to say what's in a module. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that one, but some of those, I mean, to me, those X ones, I would be hard to say that if it was just looking for genes that had the same expression pattern over time, if I was the software, I wouldn't call that a module.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we don't want to go too far down this path if this is the case, because the whole premise of the next step was, can we look at similarities? I mean, it's probably easy enough to color by crab, right?
Yeah, I probably could color by crab, but that also might make it difficult to really see what's going on.
Or but, it yeah, could I make could do it that. Easy too.
Or it could, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know.
Is it possible that some of those like crossing lines, maybe in two crab it goes up and then one crab it goes down or some of them go down?
Yeah, so on balance, WGCNA is like, okay, overall this expression is, say, like increasing, but you're still getting a down line, or you're still getting like one down line on the graph.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, or maybe it'd be possible to remove the genes where there's crisscross, and then the remaining genes, maybe there's something interesting about what those genes do.
What do you mean when you say like remove the genes with like the crisscrossing?
Could maybe filter the genes that, well, I don't know what this would mean, but you could possibly filter the gene where there wasn't consistency across crabs. Mm-hmm. It's a possibility. Because, I mean, I think we're agreeing that that's going to make things wonky if your analysis is based on the association that that's a replicate, which I don't necessarily would call it a replicate. But if your analysis is, that could explain it.
Would it also be worth like changing this from each line is one gene in one crab to each line is one gene in all crabs?
So taking the average?
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't hurt. I mean, certainly couldn't hurt. That would probably be more consistent with what the software is doing.
Okay.
But if you go back and you look at your heat map, which one of those modules did you say has the highest correlation with time? And then show it to us.
For the first one, it was the tan module.
Okay.
Which was the one with the big old X across it. So if we're going back to Baird-Eye, so, and we're doing ambient crabs, and none of the modules were significantly linked to
day,
but the closest was the tan module, which is this one here, if we're looking at log TPM.
Right. Which isn't too bad. I mean, to me, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like constant or going down. It's those ones that just go, wham, crisscross is what's crazy. What does that look? Yeah. Yeah. What does that look like on a non-log scale? Oh, okay. Yeah. That's just messed up because you've got certainly an outlier. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's probably not even biologically correct.
Yeah. That seems pretty far off.
Yeah.
A lot of them are a lot more reasonable. Like for say like the black module.
Yeah.
You know, that looks more normal.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. Again, and that module I'm okay with too. Because mm-hmm. you started out low and it's basically constant. I mean, to me, it might even be worthwhile just looking at these graphs and throwing like that one outlier and just looking at them on the same scale
mm-hmm.
and see what same, what do you call it? Yeah. The same scale, not log, but just same height. Even if you lose stuff at the top, I still think there's some value of that. Yeah, that might be the next easiest thing to do, is just play with the axes and throw out some outliers and just and see how we feel about them before pushing too farther on.
Sounds good. I'll give that a shot next.
All right. We'll just get back up to Grace. Grace had a few goals this week. Look into a list of other journals, fix legend and figure 3, and continue cleaning up repo. In case you missed it, Grace, Aiden gave himself an 11. He went off the scales to begin with. No pressure. How'd you do?
Well, let's see. I did fix figure 3. And I will post the link in the chat in case anyone wants to check it out. And let's see. I like kind of did the first bullet point. I looked into the submission guidelines for three of the three journals that we talked about last week, which were for the crab paper, BMC Genomics, BMC Research Notes, and then the G3 journal. They all look pretty similar. So I didn't really look into like which one I think the crab paper would fit in with best. So that's where that is at. And then I didn't do any more cleaning up the GitHub repo for the oyster paper.
Okay. All right. So this is the figure. So really you just move the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And got some fold enrichment.
And made the colors gray instead of black.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So then now they don't pop out as much, but you still get the idea. Yeah. I think this is good. What are other people's thoughts on this?
Yeah. I think it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to just like make the numbers in the legend a little bit bigger, or the fold enrichment text in legend a little bit bigger? Because it is kind of small, but then that looks really good.
Yeah. I mean, you're right.
Yeah.
Because especially when you shrink it down into a quarter of the size, you're going to be hard pressed to read the numbers and the.
Yeah.
That's probably true for like the X and Y axes as well. If you bump up the size there, it might look good when it's in a print.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good deal.
And then something that wasn't on the list, but we sort of talked about at the end of Publicon last week, was submitting the crab paper to BioArchive.
Yep.
And I have like the PDF and everything ready, but I didn't know what to put for their like the distribution and reuse options. And I didn't post an issue because I literally just did this right before the meeting. So
what are our choices? I don't know. For folks who submit, do they have the answer, or do they want to hear the options first?
I feel like I've used like a Creative Commons by before or something, but I can look and see what I've used.
Yeah, it should be on the papers, right? I think it's just CC by 0.
Okay.
But
that's one I was leaning towards, but I wasn't.
I'm just curious now. What are the other options?
Yeah. Let's see. I'll try to share my screen. Hopefully. Okay.
No. I think it's still thinking.
Don't let me hit any buttons.
I think it's just CC by, I think. Well, Yami, are you looking up your paper?
I looked at my Virginica one and I used the CC by NCND.
What is NCND? What does that mean again?
I think it's like you have to be credited and then no commercial purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that's CC by. It makes you do credit.
Okay, well, the NC is no commercial. I don't know what ND means.
Yeah, I don't know what ND is.
I think the difference is something remains unaltered versus someone can remix or adapt.
Yeah.
With the CC BY. I don't know what that means exactly.
Oh, no, I can read the text. Let me switch screens. Okay.
I don't know why, but I did the second option, the CC BY ND.
It's ND for no distribution.
No, because it says they can share it. I don't know if you use that the same as distribution. Man.
Yeah, it seems like ND is that it can't be altered, and NC is that it can't be used for commercial services.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm fine with just CC by myself, but I don't know. Well, what are y'all doing in your lab, Ariana, and Holly's lab?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and check. I'll see if I can find one and see what we did.
It doesn't really matter that much, Grace, to be honest with you. I would just do CC BY.
But then what does this mean, though? They can remix stuff.
Yeah, they can like change the paragraphs around, maybe change some colors on some graphs, as long as they give you credit. That's all that matters.
Okay.
No, you can pick whatever. It doesn't matter to me. Okay. I'd be thrilled if anybody shared, reused, remixed, or adapted anything I ever made. I'd just be happy if they read it. But
the most recent preprint that I could find from your lab, like the Putnam lab, Ariana, has CC by NCND.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Just pick that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing on this other one I was just looking at too. So yeah, it looks like that's the common thing.
I mean, you don't want to be on a TV commercial one day with the bioarchive paper being featured or something. I mean, if you select that, you're never going to be a possibility.
Yeah. If someone wants to create a TV commercial from my bioarchive paper, then I kind of wonder what they're doing in the advertising world.
Yeah. All right. How many points, Grace?
I feel like, I don't know. For some reason, I want to say 6. I'll do a 6.
Okay. All right, yeah, a couple other ideas. We should just set them and try to schedule a meeting. You can pick a time to meet one of my appointment slots if you want to, and just make a decision on this crab. Other thing come to mind, things in the running is like Journal of Shellfish Research. I think that's in play.
I will say from my experience with putting my paper in JSR, though, it is a big headache. Took forever.
Marine biotechnology is also should be pretty straightforward too. That's a good one. A lot of it's just going to be luck. We're just going to pick something and cross our fingers and try not to overshoot. But those are also coming to play with the other paper too. That's the other kind of consideration. It doesn't really matter, but it's kind of silly to submit them both at the same place because we kind of want to diversify. So you've got those two things going on. And what was the problem with I mean, I know there's several problems with JSR, Yamini, but you and your comment was basically around formatting.
Not like formatting, but the review, I think it took over a year between when I had submitted it to when I had when we were talking about proofs, and then months after that to when it was published. Like it was a really slow process.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, I can second that on the slow JSRE. JSR is pretty.
Okay, got Catherine, I don't think is here. Mac, I don't think is here. Laura had 2, finished discussion section in Olli expression paper and update methods and results.
I have made lots of progress in the discussion, but I have not touched the methods and results since. Well, I've touched it, but they're not updated. So, but I feel pretty good. I'm gonna give myself a 9.
Oh, I didn't say 9. All right. We got Ariana. She's only had 1 goal.
Yep. I got about 85% of the way done. So I'll give myself an 8.5.
8.5. All right.
Yep.
I got 5. I was following the math. I could have done that. I could have figured
out. I'll take the half point where I can get it.
All right. Yamini had 3. Look at locations of DMLs, characterize location of DMLs, and keep reading Ploidy.
Yeah, I did the first and last one, but not the middle one. But that's because I got preoccupied doing a bunch of other stuff that was relevant that I forgot I needed to do. So I'm going to give myself I'm going to follow Ariana, 8.5.
All right. Olivia. So yeah, part of this is, Olivia, we've still not to a place where we've kind of defined a publication because we're still kind of working through some of the technical aspects of the BLAST. But have you made any progress on that, on the BLAST, the computational aspects?
Yeah, so I was working on that today. Actually, we covered BLAST in class this week, kind of randomly. So conservation genetics, Lorenz Hauser. Okay. Yeah, we had a lab using BLAST, so awesome. I'm on my way. Yeah, I finally know enough Python and Bash to do it now. So yeah, hopefully I can finish that today. In theory, well, I had to know.
How does Lorenz's class do use BLAST? Did they do a command line or?
No, they use a mega.
That's a software?
Yeah, it's like a software. Okay. So they don't use any command lines or anything like that.
Okay, gotcha.
It does all of it, so.
Okay.
So I'm making part of that.
And obviously you've been doing a lot of other stuff besides that, such as the GUI duck experiment. Yeah. Successful spawn in last week. That was great.
Yes, got a spawn in. We did our first run of the developmental timing. Handed off to Mac, and that was successful, so that was all good. Yeah, we need to move forward with that project, which is exciting. Another spawn on Friday at Taylor. So that'll be a whole day thing. I saw that the small grant link you sent me for the shellfish stuff. Should I add that to my list this week?
I don't know. We can talk about it more like a lab meeting tomorrow, see if that's a value. I don't know if it is or not. Oh, all right, so how many points do you want to give yourself this week?
I think I'm a solid 6 or 7 for this week.
6.5. Yeah. Gotcha. Cool, Matt. Work up methyl kit script that can run on Mox and set up a new egg alert to let you know when RAM goes on sale.
Yeah, I guess those goals are kind of outdated now because I've been skipping so many.
Okay, I was about to say, those seem like very old ones. Oh, that's what Laura must just be copying and keep copying it or something.
Yeah. So I did run methyl kit on my local machine. So I have the differentially methylated locus lists.
Cool. Is there anything fun in there?
Yeah. So that's my next step. I got the lists left, right. I need to go through and sort of figure out, I guess, the locations. And anybody have any suggestions about what the pathway forward would be? That'd be great.
How many DML do you have?
So I ran it for 25% and 50% coverage. And I think for the 50%, it was only like 8,000.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Maybe it's reverse. 50% is like a couple hundred, and then the 25% is 8,000. Does that make sense? More sense?
25%, you said percent difference. And then what are you saying? And you're saying it's got to be in every sample?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A couple hundred makes more sense than 8,000. I only asked because I finally got DML out of my ploidy stuff, and I have like 1 DML for ploidy differences and 4 for pH differences.
What? All that work?
I know.
That's interesting.
Which is why I was curious.
Yeah, let me check for sure, but that's was my recollection.
I don't think I've ever got 8,000. I mean, geez, that's like quarter of the transcript of the, it doesn't matter. It's, but that's a lot, isn't it? I don't think we've ever come across thousands.
I ended up with thousands for the Manchester stuff, but I think that's just because my sample size is lower, right? Like the Hawaii stuff, there's like 24 samples total. Yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, I think it also, hopefully it more matters on the treatment than the number of samples that we've never done anything that's caused a change in methylation to be that great. But I am thinking right with software, I mean, you can set it where it doesn't necessarily have to be present in every single sample, right?
Yeah. You can, when you do your Unite, you can say, I want loci in like, keep the loci if they're there in like X number of samples per treatment.
Yeah. And what did you do, Yamini?
I said, keep all of them.
Okay.
I wanted the loci present in all samples, but I might need to tweak that.
Would that be a pain to tweak?
No, now that I can run methyl kit on our studio just fine. Wouldn't it be a pain?
Yeah.
Tweak.
It'd be interesting if it's like you set it up to like 90% or something like that, just to see what, because basically what you're possibly doing there is removing the possibility to look for analysis.
Yep.
That's where you're setting that. And then so you admit end of the day, because you've got so many samples, it really is not looking at too many loci to even call.
Yeah.
So I would definitely be leaning on for missing data, because that's a missing data thing. And then the second question is, okay, at what percent difference do you set it at? And I don't know what people have conventionally done, but what do y'all conventionally say is different? I mean, Laura, you do this too. What did y'all probably use the same thing? Is it 25%, 50%?
I've been using 50, but I'm now playing around with like 25, 50, and 75.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty, if methyl kit runs, that's a pretty easy just change in a value, right? So what are you looking at here, Matt?
So this is my output for the 50%. And so I could scroll down and there's thousands here. Yeah, almost 4,000, 3,800.
What's the treatment?
The treatment here is flighty. All of them went through the same stress, so I don't have a control group for the GPS.
No, I mean, you're comparing, is this stress, non-stress, or triploid versus diploid versus triploid?
Ploidy in the stressed, yeah, treatment. So ploidy is the independent variable.
Yeah. Well, I think the easy next, this is a lot. This is, it seems unusual, but the next step to do is I would plot this in probably IGV and actually see it, the data. Is that what you were thinking, Yamini?
Yeah, just a lot of times, like there are times where like you'll look at the DML and IGV and you're like, that does not look right. Like that should not have been called. Kind of helps. But yeah, it's, I feel like the last time I did any sort of DML thing with the Progenica stuff, it was like, yeah, like I had like 500 DML, not like thousands.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, these are only differentially methylated, right? And then the magnitude might be trivial, right? So that's why they have like the meth difference parameter here. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you can do cutoffs with those and like only choose, you know, differences that we find meaningful. But yeah, after visualizing an IGV, maybe that makes more sense.
Right, but how many samples do you, I mean, what's your comparison here? I mean, how many versus how many?
I had 5 samples total, so 5 in each group.
Okay, so it's 5 versus 5. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how many loci, you probably don't know the answer to this question, but how many loci do you have data for all samples?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so that's what the unite command is. So if you set it to all of them, that means out of, yeah, I mean, to me, it would be, you'd be lucky to get this many loci that you have data for. But yeah, anyway, the take home is IGV will give you the answer to most to everything to see if you feel like it's a valid call.
Yeah, and you don't have any covariates, right, Matt?
So it's just that simple. It's you just have 10 samples, 5 are diploid and 5 are triploid, and they're all stressed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my Virginica gonad comparison was 5 versus 5. They're all the same ploidy, but there was a stress treatment there, yeah. And that was like 598 DML. So,
I don't know. This could be the most profound biological discovery of the year too. So we don't want to. Okay, we don't.
Yeah, that's what I used your code, Yamini, and I just changed the treatment around to
ploidy
and ran it. So that's basically
cool.
What this is.
Well, yeah, maybe it is. It's cool. Yeah, I'd love to see it. I don't know how to actually do that. I think right now we have scripts where the bed files probably were created in the Bismarck script, bed graphs, or I don't even know if that's even a true statement. But in theory, the bed graphs would have been created during the Bismarck step, and now you just would just join these two data tables and plot, but I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. Speaking of which, while I'm thinking about it, Yamini, I did run Alan's stuff through our Bismarck pipeline. I'm transferring it off Mox right now, so we can talk to him about that. But I don't know if I probably said this, but the biggest thing I saw was the huge variation in percent mapping that I got across samples, which is kind of scary, which I don't even understand. Unless, so have we ever talked about this, Yamini?
I can't remember. You did in Science Hour.
Science Hour, yeah. So it's almost the only thing I'm hoping is just maybe it's just algae or like real. Yeah, like, yeah. So it's mapping. He's got other samples because otherwise, if it's a lab procedure, which he was kind of suggesting, that's even scarier because then you can't even predict and you might as well throw out, then you just might as well throw out all the data. But I don't see how you could bias a sample. Then again, I've never met a library by some type of like PCR stuff. But that's what he was trying to suggest. But it's just whole genome bisulfite, right?
Yeah, it's just whole genome bisulfite. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you on the algae contamination. Like, I think there's just something else there.
Hopefully some real other DNA reads that just happen not to be oyster, which doesn't make it any easier for analysis, but at least explains the logic.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's go back up the list and see. We'll set the goals for next week. All right. So, Matt, what are your goals for this coming week?
Yeah, I guess you confirmed that I actually have this many DMLs and then visualize them and start to, I guess you group them into processes like we saw in Grace's paper, right? You start to see which biological pathways possibly are impacted.
I'd plot an IGV, make sure you feel good about it, and then try to see what kind of processes through types of enrichment analysis. I mean, this, you certainly have enough. How do we do this? So this is, you're going to have to like first characterize where they are, like genes. I'm going to be outside of genes. And then that's in and of itself is interesting. And then if you wanted to, once you got in the gene, then you could do the functional stuff, but you don't throw out everything that's not in the gene. And then I guess sometimes y'all go ahead, Yami.
I was going to say, when you're looking at like where the DML are in the genome, I just made the genome feature tracks for the Roslyn genome. I can drop a link to where they are, but that would be like also helpful if you're like looking at it in IGV to look at it with the different genome tracks.
Awesome, great.
So hopefully we should really get those up in the genomic resources in the handbook too.
They are, that's the drink link I added.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't even need the link. You just say, look at the handbook, Matt, don't ask me. Speaking of handbook, Did y'all see the new version of the, I know this is not on topic, but open house kind of site based on that same technology. Okay, not okay. We don't have too much time to tweet. We only got like, 10 more days, 9 more days. Hopefully that's the platform's okay. And we can just tweak it from there. All right. Maybe it's not on, I think. Back to Yamini. Yamini, your goals for this week?
Yeah, so I think for the Manchester data set, like I have all my DML and I'm like just finishing like characterizing the like general methylation landscape. So I'm just gonna like dig more into those DML and like finish characterizing where they are in the genome. So that's like first goal. Second goal for the Hawaii DML that I have is to play around with like how much data is included in that unite function, but also look into the DSS package, because for the Hawaii project, right, I have two variables and I'm using one of them as a covariate for the other, but I would like to be able to do some sort of like global test where I look at like both variables simultaneously. And I like wonder how that'll change what DML are identified. And then I'm trying to filter my CT SNPs for both data sets, so I could figure out if any of them intersect with my DML. Yeah, sure. Three goals sounds reasonable. That's what I'll do this week.
Laura, right. Do you need a short? Each goal needs to be four words or less.
I'll type them in the chat for you.
Okay. And not paragraphs. All right. Ariana, goals for this week.
So I'm going to roll over the goal from last week again and finish that. And then I'm going to add doing a centroid analysis for the E5 data. So I'm going to try to basically look at the PCAs that I've made for that and calculate the movement of the centroid as a function of like the standard deviation of the spread, basically like a numerical value of how much the centroid moves. So anyway, centroid analysis is my second goal.
All right, let's back up. Matt, did I get your scores from the last week?
10,
gotcha. All right.
And then Ariana, centroid analysis is pretty cool. It's really big in morphometrics.
Oh, okay, cool. We talked to the collaborator who used it and did some calculations, but couldn't think of like what the name of it is. So if you have any of those papers that have used it, I'd love to see them. But otherwise, I'll do some Googling.
Yeah, last time I read into it was like the evolution of crab claws and stuff. There's like a bunch of people doing work trying to figure out why, you know, appendages in crabs are shaped the way that they are. And so they do that through centroid analysis, and they make arguments about like the adaptivity of specific shapes.
Cool. Okay. Thanks. I will dig into that.
Yeah. Crabs use their claws for lots of different things.
So. Cool. Thanks. Yeah, I'll search around.
Repeat what you're using it for again, Mariana.
So basically for the E5 data, we have those PCA plots that have arrows like over time, the centroids move. And so we want to basically have like this species moved more than another one in a numerical value.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and that's our same sort of vein. A lot of people have done that for sea urchins, right? So the walking behavior of sea urchins, whether or not they walk stochastically or not, there's been a lot of work on that.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Yeah, I'll do some digging.
All right. Laura, your goals for this week?
They're the same goals.
Same goals.
Finish discussion, update methods and results. Maybe if I have time, write some bullet points for the intro.
You. What's your goals?
So my goals are to play around with the graphs until I get something that seems to make some sense. And regraph with different colors for the crabs. And I mean, beyond that, really just try to figure out what the next step is.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. I get a feeling you get those graphs, try to just graph them on the same scale, throw out some outliers and let's look at them again and see what value these modules have for your purposes. Because to me, if they're not giving you data on expression over time, I'm not immediately seeing a value. I don't know if anybody else is seeing something, but I'm not, maybe I'm too fixated on that, but I'm looking for some kind of like pattern over time and clustering based on that. And so if it's not giving us that, I don't know how much more effort needs to be put into it.
Yeah. Steven, what do you think about time analyses with only three time points?
I guess it doesn't hurt me too much. I mean, I feel like there's like 40,000 genes and over three time points, some of them have to, some of them, yes, they could be by chance, but some of them are going to have the same pattern. You know, some of them are going to go up, some of them are going to go down, some are going to go up, down, and some are going to go flat. And I just feel like that would be nice to see. What do you think? You're thinking from a statistical point of view or from a biological point of view, or?
I was just curious, maybe it's some topic for the group, but I mean, the minimum number of points you need for like a regression would be three, right? I mean, technically two, but two is too susceptible to chance events, right? So it's either one point is above the other point. That's what you're basically testing. But if you have 3 points in time series, it almost, in my opinion, seems to be more useful to collapse them into just categories and look for like differences between the categories and groups. So not treat them as time specifically.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So keep going with that. How would you classify them in categories?
Yeah. So I need to know a little bit more about Aiden's experiment. So maybe you can talk about the different time points, but it looks like two of the time points are pretty close together, right? So
bring up one of your graphs, Aiden? I mean, essentially, and Grace chime in, you do the stuff, but basically there's time zero, and then after time zero, that's like at the same temperature. Well,
yeah, so please like correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Grace, but my understanding is, so you have all these crab in three in different tanks, and on day zero, all crab are at ambient temperature. Over the course from day zero to day two, those temperatures were either maintained for the ambient temperature crab, lowered for the cold temperature crab. And on day two, the crab had like, they've reached their temperature treatment and they were then held at that temperature until day 17.
So basically the three time points of sampling, Matt, are day zero, day two, and day 17.
Okay, great. Yeah. And so the day zero and day two are different in that day zero is like the pre-treatment control and day two is the like post-treatment application, but it's still not, the treatment hasn't been applied long enough for acclimation to happen, right? Theoretically.
When is the temperature, and some of them, the temperature doesn't change, right? Because some of them are kept at ambient. So it's, does the temperature change occur relative to the day two sampling point? Would you say that again?
My understanding is that like the temperature change was very gradual. So it started on day zero and ended at day two.
Oh, okay. Is that right? Sound right to you, Grace? And then sampling was, okay.
And the thing is all of, or most of the, actually, yeah, all of the graphs that I've showed you so far are for ambient temperature crabs. So for those, like, the temperature was just held static the whole time.
Yeah. So for all the, what he's showing us today, Matt, there's no temperature change per se. We're just looking at a progression. And a lot of this is the background, a lot of the rationale behind this is there's an infection on some of these, right, Aiden?
Yeah. So actually, all of these are infected crab.
Right. So we also have infection data. And so we're trying to see if the pattern is related to the infection. But so if I'm understanding you, so one way I'm hearing you, Matt, is we could just categorize stuff and say, okay, it's these genes went dramatically up after day two at day 17 or stayed the same or went down and just bend them into those categories. Is that what you mean by categories or something more robust?
Yeah, I was just saying that the word time series here kind of loses some of its power in comparison to the, like, what experience did the animal have, right? So there's different treatments and you're going through different exposures, and it seems like that a lot of them are held stable and you have this co-effect of they're infected or not. Yeah, the day 17 versus 2 versus 0 doesn't mean as much here as maybe the category. So, but yeah, yes, because any covariate of time, I think you just need a little bit more information about more time steps. Like one more time step in the middle might lend yourself to more of a time analysis, but here.
Yeah, but maybe I'm using the wrong word by time analysis. I mean, I guess it's the change over what's the variation in expression over sampling period almost, and then take that data and then overlay it onto the kind of, and seeing if that can be explained by like infection status. Like, is those that are highly infected always seeing green module have a high expression in day 17 or something like that? I mean, it's not phrasing. Go ahead.
I guess one of the problems is that I don't think we have data from uninfected crabs. So we're really just looking at, I mean, we have,
right,
like,
but you have a continuum. You have a continuum of infection. So you could bend those in low, medium, and high too, right?
Would we be able to with only, you know, three crab that we're really looking at?
Yeah, good point. Okay.
The continuum of infection is like infection load or something. You measure.
Yeah, the amount. I think quantitative PCR, Grace, values.
Sorry, what was the question?
Quantitative PCR was used to look the level of hematidinium in these samples, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, those are all good points. What about this then? Let's just pretend, let's get back to the very simplest point of view. Just to let me talk this out. So if you had just one crab, to me, there's some value of knowing how a gene expression changes from day 0 to 17 in captivity and seeing if that's consistent across crabs. Yes, no, boring, value.
I guess that's kind of what I'm looking at, where I'm looking at just gene expression for crabs where there is no change in temperature over day 0 to 17.
Yeah.
And I mean, nothing's really popping out that seems to show that those patterns of expression are consistent over crabs.
Yeah, but it seems like I'm still at a loss of how we quantitatively are saying that, because I'm not comfortable with the WGCNA. But to me, is if you had some kind of metric of saying, using some threshold of, you know, what genes between day 2 and day 17 did the increase go up twofold, right? You can do math on that, and you can give me a list of genes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you could look at those at all three crabs and see if those are all the same genes or they're just random and there's no, or are they all immune related genes because they're going, you know, they're whatever, they're 15 days of sitting in at a warmer an ambient temperature and are infected with hematidinium.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of like using WGCNA as like the judge of that, where it's looking at like how much do each of these modules vary with like crab and how much do they vary with day. But yeah, if we aren't getting good stuff from WGCNA, then yeah, that question.
I mean, I think it's doing is what you're telling it to do. I just don't think it's, yeah, it's not directly answering the question, but we could directly answer a question just by using the values and seeing if there's a group of genes. Yeah. I don't know.
So Aiden, all your measurements are from specific crabs. Are you following crabs over time?
Yep. Yeah. Same crabs.
So are you using like crab as the blocking variable in the stats here? Or you do, this is assuming independence here in this graph.
I believe I'm giving it both information on crab and day and letting it bin based on whatever. Like it. So my understanding of WGCNA is a little iffy, but my understanding is it groups the genes based on expression into eigengenes and then sees how much each of those eigengenes is correlated with both crab and day.
Okay. Yeah, just because conceptually, the performance across days here is tied to crab, right? So they're not independent from a statistical perspective. If you're measuring different crabs on different days, then they would be. But here, the expression levels or gene activity at day 2 should be impacting day 17. Right?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
The expression levels of genes in a specific crab, right, are dependent on the history of expression in that crab, right? So across time, it's either an increase or decrease that is in respect to the previous expression, right?
Okay.
So they're not independent here. Okay. So I'm not quite sure if the p-values here are meaningful because they're ignoring the codependence of these variables.
Okay. All right, I think I'm following you here.
Right, and because this is what you're getting at, Matt. I mean, that's to me the value. I mean, we can just step back 30,000 feet here, and that's the value of the data. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we have sampling the same crab over 3 time spots, right? And so, I'm trying to make sure we get every. To me, that's a lot. It's quite valuable to look within a crab over time. And so what's the best way to, and I understand what y'all are talking about now is y'all aren't even sure if the WGCNA is accounting for that fact. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I think that in this analysis, you have to tell it that your data's is a grouped set of data, right? So the grouping is crab ID or whatever, crab name.
Okay.
And you're like tracking a specific crab over time.
And you think that's in this, you think you've done that, Aiden, or you want to double check?
I'm not entirely sure if I have done that. Like, so the way that I've set up this input is for, basically it creates a DE-seq object. And for that, I give it a design matrix that involves both crab traits. So this right here, so both crab and days as possible factors, but then with the key variable being day. So I don't know if that accounts for like the interaction there.
And you have how many crabs total?
3 crabs at ambient, 3 crabs at elevated, 1 crab at lowered. And this analysis is just like each group of crabs. So I'm like just looking at, say, the 3 ambient crabs for these comparisons.
Yeah.
I will also say when I ran WGCNA, like there's a portion where you try to figure out like, what is it, like the scale independence. So yeah, so you're trying to determine a soft thresholding power. And in more or less in every case, so the goal is to pick the first value that like meets the bar of like 0.8 for the scale free topology model fit. And, you know, ideally that'll be like below, like if it's below 12, like, or ideally that'll be low, more or less. Most of the examples that I saw had it being like 4 to 8, and mine like didn't even come close. So I was using like, I don't know how much that would affect stuff because I don't really know the inner workings of WGCNA, but that might be of interest in how that impacts my results.
Okay. You've got for one crab, you've got some normalized value of expression. What do you call them? TPKM?
Oh, just TPM, yeah.
TPM. For how many genes?
Depends on the crab, but say like 90,000, I want to say.
90,000.
Depends on the transcriptome I use to align it to.
Okay, just for fun, put in the GitHub and the discussion board, put in one table with one crab with TPMs over 3 days and ask what's the best way to graph. Let's see if, and I'll try to play around with it. Maybe others. I just want to see the data and get a feel for the data of what we're looking, what kind of patterns one crab would have in their gene repertoire.
I was going to, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just basically, so you want me to put in one data table with like all the TPM for a single crab at those three time points.
Yep.
Perfect. Okay.
A URL to it, and don't paste the whole table.
Sounds good.
Go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe if your goal is to understand like baseline expression upon acclimation to the hatchery or infection, if that's what's happening here, you could look at each crab independently to see what processes are like changing over time. And so characterize that for three crabs independently.
Yeah. And I think that's where we kind of started as an idea, but that approach is not amenable to WGCNA analysis. That's why I'm kind of going back. So let's just look at a crab. But I agree with you 100%, Laura. I would love to have for every crab, just tell me like Grace's picture. Just give me a biological description of what's going on crab A and B and C and D and E and F and G and H. Are they the same or are they different? And if are they different, is it driven by temperature? I mean, that's where my head wants to go at the kind of the very base level of just patterning.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what you need to do, right? You need to look at each crab and compare them and see if there's like a crab level effect, right? So is one crab just naturally doing something strange?
Yeah.
And then if the variation between crabs is smaller than the treatment effect variation, then you can start to look at the treatment effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to me, like I said, a good first step is just see if we can give us some TPM data for one crab and see if we can classify that crab in any meaningful way. And then whatever we figure out works, then just do it for all the crabs and then go down the path.
Okay.
So one way to get around.
Go ahead, Matt.
Now one way to like get around this quick and dirty is just to feed in expression ratios, right, into the analysis rather than so they're already like corrected. To some degree.
What are expression ratios?
So the gene expression ratio is the expression of whatever gene you're looking at in comparison to a previous state, right?
So for day two, it'd be looking at like day two expression as like how much did it change in comparison to day zero expression?
Because you've got the baseline for all of them, right? Because you have a day zero before anything was happening.
Well, I mean, I guess part of the problem is that that works for the elevated temperature crab, but for the ambient temperature crab, like nothing really changed aside from them being in a tank.
Right. So you'd expect their expression ratio to be very small.
Yeah. That's if you're answering the question. The one very important question, if you're asking the question, what's the effect of temperature? Then you could do exactly what Matt's saying, you know, just make it relative ratio over day zero. But I mean, we are looking at that, but I'm trying to also open up the idea of just curious at day zero, is crab B just funky? Is it just throwing it off?
Maybe the graphs that I'm planning to do where it's, you know, the same as these, like, you know, graphs that I just did, but with each crab is a different color. Like that might shed a little light on that.
Oh yeah. I mean, that definitely tells us something. That's definitely can't hurt.
Okay.
But then you could also see like the lines that go down if they're all in one crab, or even if they're not, you could see like what are those genes, are they like enriched for something compared to the ones that don't go down.
So like pull out all of these genes here and see if there's
so that gets to the other question I was going to have. I mean, in theory, you have a list of all these genes and you've got an annotation for all these genes too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Would it make any sense to run WGCNA on like all of the crabs grouped by L, like by basically all the crabs together, both elevated and ambient temperatures?
I don't know. Right now, I'm not having much faith in WGCNA, giving it what I think we wanted to do. I mean, some of it, I think it's worth pursuing what Matt's asking about, whether it's locking in, it's taking that in consideration. But I would focus more just on what you were just talking about with Laura, about coloring these, whatever, by function, but also putting that table up with just one crab and just focus on describing one. Just think about describing one crab. Like, can you quantitatively describe what's going on in one crab? Mm-hmm. That's why I was saying put it up on the discussion board, data for one crab. And so then we can come up with some metrics and then decide if is there two, like Matt was saying, is there more variation? Is it just all individual thing and there's really not a treatment effect, which is fine. But what is going on within each crab in terms of these whatever 50,000 genes? Is there a subset that are active and subset that are not, and so on and so on.
Okay.
Because remember, the other, just the nuance here, just to add, we're talking for every crab, there's two data sets. I mean, I don't know if there's as too much as the expression of the crab, and then there's the expression of the hematidinium, right? Right. Aiden, what are we looking at now?
So this is crab.
Crab, yeah. I mean, hematidinium can't be very many genes.
Yeah, very few.
Yeah.
I could see doing, Aiden, what you just suggested with Matt's adjustment, where you looked at expression ratio. So that encapsulates the crab specific expression because it's relative to the previous time point. And then you could look at by day and by temperature.
Okay.
I don't know, does that make sense to anyone else?
Yeah, it definitely simplifies the data, right? So you're just plotting two points. I think day 2 and day 17, and those numbers are ratios of what the value of that gene was in day 0. That's what you're talking about, right, Matt?
Or is it a sliding ratio? Or
what do you mean?
Yeah, basically you're trying to weight your data, right? So that you remove some effect of, in this case, crab, and then you can fudge independence by, pushing it through the model that's already treating, day and crab as independent. And the only question is, how much does that expression at day 0 sort of normalize for that crab? Is that a normal day for that crab, or was that crab just doing something strange that day? Like, that's the only thing that you run into at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. And does anybody know if WGCNA will work just fine on expression ratios?
I don't really see somebody can correct me. I don't really see a value of WGCNA in that. But I think Matt was probably going down that path of using WGCNA for that. But I think there's value of it just looking at the data for the data's sake at that point. What were you thinking, Matt?
Yeah, I don't really know. I found one comment on the Bioconductor forum that talks about doing something similar using WGCNA, like patient data, where you have patients that you're tracking over time.
Yeah.
Is this before a 6-week endurance program and one after?
Perhaps, yeah. Okay. Have you seen this before?
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Doing some Googling.
Yeah, they only had two time points, right? So a little easier in that case. But I think you have a good justification here for using day 0 as the weighting variable and then looking at day 2 and 17.
And I think WGCNA, it would still provide you with these clusters.
Yeah.
Whatever you call it, it could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it might make it more simpler to understand. Yeah,
that's what I'm running into with the DBSeq stuff. Like, I'm looking at each individual gene, and I'm seeing very similar patterns in this group of genes, and I'm just looking them up manually. It'd be great if I just had a bunch of them clustered together, and I could characterize them all at once. So
yeah,
have you? I mean, I know your WGCNA isn't getting you exactly what you wanted, but have you looked into doing kind of what Laura was talking about, and looking at biological processes within each module, like WGCNA module, and trying to pull out enrichment within each module?
Because I did see that you did that in your original script, but I didn't get all the way through the end of that.
Only because, it may also help you understand what's being grouped together and why. If there's anything that, sometimes something could come from it, something could also just not come from it, and it might just be a useless rabbit hole, but just related fitter.
But yeah. Could be good.
No, yeah. I mean, I think certainly it would help you with grouping what's together, and there could be some curiosity there. But my eye's drawn to the left here, where you've got the two X's up there, black module and the green yellow module, that look to me kind of the same. And so that analysis wouldn't tell me why WGCNA is calling that one black and that one green yellow. And that's kind of the part I'm interested in knowing is why is it. I mean, I kind of know why, because you're showing me those other dendrograms, and that's why. But biologically, that doesn't really help. There's a disconnect between the dendrogram, I guess, and what's the expression pattern. That's what's hurting my head, is taking the dendrograms and saying, why is that it? Why is it grouping that? Why is that a dendrogram?
I guess since it's not like looking just off of crab, could it be like just these have very different, or sorry, just off a day, like these just have very different expression patterns by crab?
Yeah, I don't know. Or it could be total value. It could be the scales. One could be looking at the big bars at 30,000 and one big bars at 50,000. I mean, I could believe that. But again, show me the
dendrogram. They actually do have very different scales.
Yeah, so that's probably what the explanation. It's the scales. That's why at least keeping the scales the same helps us compare what's going on. Because I mean, ultimately, that's where my disconnect comes in. I would like to have a good feeling of how it's calling these by module, because we open up a dendrogram real quick.
This one right here?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's basically what it's doing. You've got green, you're looking at a merge dynamic. It's calling everything neon green or black based on the dendrogram, which are expression patterns, which I'm having a hard time with. Would this be the same thing as like a PCA and everything in the royal blue would be in the same location based on doing a PCA of all the expression like you do, Laura? Or that's what I'd like to wrap my head around. It's like, what is it? What's the dendrogram showing?
Yeah.
Could you use the dendrogram classifications to look at like a heat map of gene expression somehow? Because like I want like the log, the CPM graphs that you have like are useful, but I wonder if like, at least personally, like I just retain a lot more information if I look at a heat map. Yes. Like it's a lot easier to understand.
No, like she's talking about like a heat map, like every gene. So I would love to see every gene and then see this block of genes with a pattern and say, oh yeah, WGCNA is calling this the green yellow module. And, oh, it's because it's got this patterning.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've seen some of those produced by WGCNA somewhere. So
yeah,
I could.
But let's not get too complicated. Let's minimally make sure we can go back to that one crab model, and have comfortably that we can say something about one crab.
Okay.
Before we get too lost in that, because I think the same. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, I'm sure. Yeah. Did you do like filtering for coverage across all samples?
Yeah. So for, let's see. So what was it? I think for all, since I was dealing with 9 total samples, the suggestion is to eliminate all genes that have like counts of less than 10 in, okay. Basically, I filtered out everything that didn't have counts over 10 in multiple samples. I think that's the simplest way to say it.
Yeah, I guess So I was just thinking if it's possible that missing data could make things look weird. Like, what are those zeros in those X plots? Are they zeros? Do you know what I mean? If the line goes all the way down to the x-axis, does that mean that there's zero counts? And does that just mean that it's missing?
I think it definitely could, like, because for a lot of them, like, there was just zero counts for...
Yeah, but that's a little bit different than coverage. That could be just not biologically expressed, right?
Right, but it could mean that they're... Yeah, totally. I'm just thinking, yeah, if for some reason lack of data is... throwing off these patterns somehow.
Yeah.
So you're saying like in the library when it was sequenced, like not everything was like ended up in.
Yeah, like maybe that, maybe those, maybe one of the crab had like few reads or something and didn't have as much, you just didn't have as much data in general. And so it's showing zeros for a lot of the genes. I don't know. I just wanted to, check to see if there was any filtering prior to this. Because I know that like DE-seq, you just feed it raw data, basically raw count data. But I didn't know, you know, maybe with WGCNA, it's more important to do more like intensive culling of the data.
Yeah, it does not get happy if you like don't do any filtering. So
yeah
that was actually, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, never mind. Go for it.
I was just going to say, yeah, like that was a big issue before starting to run it on mocks, like just not enough space to like be generous with the filters. All right. So it sounds like kind of next step is just get that GitHub data for the one crab and then a whole lot of stuff to try out and see what ends up producing some interest in.
Yep.
Here's a paper aid looks at weighted analyses of this kind. Don't know if it's useful.
Thank you.
Is that everybody? No, Grace. Goals.
Yes. Fix the oyster figure text size and then pick a journal for the crab and submit.
Yeah. Maybe if you want to schedule a meeting with me, I can.
Yeah, I picked a slot for tomorrow. That's
right. Okay. All right. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, I'm going to try and run IGV and look at the DMLs. And then, actually have a concrete pathway forward next week.
Well, I have a goal. Goalless. If I was to have one, we'll diversify a little bit. I'll say work on the GUI duck paper. I think we moved some on that one this week, but I don't know. All righty. Well, thanks everybody. I think that was really helpful. Good stuff there. Have a good afternoon-y.